Another episode of the Garment Decorators podcast.
Hello.
I'm Ollie.
How are you?
Helpful. Educational.
Research the heat press.
The best podcast conversations we have had.
My business called Drum the Garlic Design.
With Matt from PrintPro UK.
It's nice to be here.
I have loved this episode. If you're a garment decorator, welcome to the crew. Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Garment Decorators podcast. We are kicking off a new season of this podcast with a Q&A episode, mainly because it's been a while since we've actually sat down and had a conversation, just the two of us, about printing. And we've had a lot of questions come in over our like social channels and stuff over the last few months. So I figured the best way to kick off the new season would be with a generic Q&A, talk about everything that people want to know.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah?
Yeah, what have they been asking?
So they have been asking a lot, to be fair. There's a lot, they're really different questions in here. So the first question is from Instagram. I feel like this is one that we get quite a lot. How do I choose between DTF screen print and heat transfer vinyl for starting a new business?
It's a good question. I guess it really depends on what type of business you're going for.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing like small run stuff and it's just black or white, or if it's multicolor, I'll go DTF on the small run stuff. And then once I got to about 10 to 25 units of the same design each time, then I'd switch between Inktra or Ultracolor or Ultracolor Pro, depending on how many colors, because you're going to get a better price.
That's the
If I was running my own business, that's how I would do it. I would, even at 10 units, you know, you can look for good price breaks with us. So that's the way to look at it. There's volume breaks at 100 to 200, 300, 400, 500 and so on. So as you grow, you can actually bring your prices down, which is quite nice.
Yeah. And even for a new business, like there's no sort of wrong choice in terms of decoration method, because they all look amazing, feel amazing, will last, providing you apply them correctly. But it is just thinking about pricing from the beginning stages of your business through to the end so that you can be profitable and you can grow and scale.
Yeah, and then with regards to vinyl, it really depends on what effect you're trying to achieve.
So you'd go for heat transfer vinyl more so for speciality finishes than you would for generic.
Yeah, because there's certain things you can do with vinyl that you can't do with anything else. Like if you want that glitter finish, it still looks best in vinyl.
Yeah.
We have shimmer transfers, which look amazing. But if you if glitter is what the customer wants, what you want, then glitter vinyl is the way to go. Flock vinyl still looks really good. If you want to start with silicon vinyl could be a good place to start with there as well. It's really easy to cut and weed. It looks great on shirts. Or if I was, you know, if you're just doing like big sports numbers, you can get quite a lot done with vinyl there still, because the main reason to decide when to switch is really it comes down to like how much time you spend weeding. So if you don't spend much, if this is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and they're giant numbers, then there's not much weeding. So
no, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, go with vinyl because it'll be probably more cost effective for you.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, is what is going to be the most cost effective for the business, and not just in terms of the buy price, it's the work price that's involved, how much labor is involved in each
production
product.
Time for each decoration process. Yeah,
that's the main choice between vinyl and transfers, is how much work is involved in it for me.
Yeah,
if it balances, then fine. If it doesn't balance, then you've got to go with transfers.
If you were weeding the design that you're wearing, that would be way too much time, like with the little cavities in there, and when you start to, you know, pick apart like eyes and stuff like that, and you lose the top of them, and you're like, well, that's a waste of an entire design.
Yeah.
That's when you move from vinyl to transfers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You've really got to depend on what your overall game is that you want to, and you know, what you're trying to achieve, because you know, that's when you're also going to say, okay, do I need a small cutter or a big cutter?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously there's quite a big price difference between those two as well.
Yeah.
So you need to
think that with like vinyl and transfers, a lot of people, let's say for example, they just want to do short runs and vinyl is more cost effective. How long are you going to be doing those short runs? Because if you invest in a vinyl cutter, they're not overly expensive, but it's still an outlay to your business that you're going to have to consider. And if in the next 2 to 3 months you're considering doing slightly higher orders with transfers anyway, is it worth just skipping the vinyl and going straight for transfers? From a like initial investment?
It really comes down to what the end customer is. I would say depend, you know, are you personalizing? Are you going to be prototyping a lot? In that case, you're better off just doing it with vinyl. in your own time rather than ordering lots of transfers each time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is the specialty finish a big factor? Because yeah. I think that with vinyl is quite a good place to start with, because I think that, you know, we've both started using vinyl when we first joined here because it's part of our induction program. But you learn a lot about transfers from vinyl.
Yeah,
I think you learn how to be, it's a good basis for being a decorator, that, you know, it's a good skill set to have. But, you know, a vinyl cutter could be £350. So it's not a massive outlay. It's only really if you're like, okay, my business is glitter, or like, I'm really going to concentrate on that as a product I want to offer people. And then if you start to do volume at glitter, then you have to think about, like, actually, maybe I need like the Graphtec cutter, which could be more like £3,500.
That's where the price comes into it. Yeah.
That's when it's like, okay, what is the, but it's really like, what do your customers want? Because you can get a cutter and you can get vinyl next day. That's easy. You can get transfers in 2 days, one day if it's Ultracolor Max. But, you know, you've really got to let the work dictate. If you already started out and you've got some work, we'll use that as your basis. If you've got no work, then I'd wait and see what work you got first,
mm-hmm.
and then go from there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can get everything quickly and you're not going to be having a negative effect on the job you're offering with turnaround time, because it's just so quick to get it.
It's all within a couple of days, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. So staying on a similar topic then of like starting out from a business, how much should I charge for custom t-shirts is probably one of the most requested mm-hmm. questions,
yeah.
if that makes sense. I think this comes down to the fact that we have been talking a lot about starting a business, about the different types of blank apparel you can get. We have been talking a lot about transfer types and the differences between them. But I think, yeah, it's a good idea to break down the costs of each thing from like a rough ballpark figure, because obviously every t-shirt's different depending on whether or not you're going from a good, better or best option. Prices will be different. Like you've just touched on there, scalability for transfers, those prices will be different because the more you order, the less you're paying.
Yeah.
But as a generic piece of advice for a decorator in 2025, what would you recommend, or how does someone go about figuring out how much to charge?
I think it covered a lot of it there with pricing. Is like, okay, well, first things first is how much it costs to produce the t-shirt.
Mm.
That's the first thing to consider. So t-shirt, transfer, packaging it's going out on, if that's relevant, any paperwork that's going in, it's still a cost to you. If you're printing a piece of paper, it might be 3p, but it's still a
3p
cost.
3p times 100.
Yeah, exactly. So everything that goes into it, depending on how you're paying off the machinery. So if it's a heat press, you might want to, you pay that on a daily rate, or whether it's all just paid and you're happy with that. You don't want it to be included, but like breakdown things, like even like the electricity and everything it takes to run a business needs to be factored into the sort of the production of a t-shirt, really. If you can break it down per time, or if you're starting out, you know, you're gonna have to put more of that cost into each t-shirt because there'll be less of them.
Yeah.
So you've got to, okay, what is my cost of a t-shirt? And then really you need to think about, it's adding a percentage on there, because you want to make some profit from those.
Yeah.
You need to make the profit to have the cash flow to buy the next set of t-shirts and transfers or whatever it could be. So figure out what the cost of the t-shirt is and then try and add like 30-50% onto that at least. Mm-hmm. And have like a minimum amount you're comfortable getting. And if you don't get that amount, they'll probably walk away from those jobs anyway.
Mm.
But then it really comes down to who is the customer that you're offering it to, because you can change that depending on what type of customer it is. If you're just making one t-shirt for a plumber around the corner from you, then probably there's less profit in that. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It's probably an easy job.
It's a good word of mouth for business.
Yeah, but if you're doing it for a bigger business that's, you know, not far from you, and perhaps they're in tech or something a little bit, I guess, a higher perceived wage brackets in the building perhaps, and what they're prepared to pay for a garment is different. So you can, I would start higher and try and stick there as well. But also, you're also probably going to be using different garments for those people.
Mm-hmm.
So find the true cost of what it takes to manufacture something, add a percentage you're comfortable to make some profit. If you go higher than that,
mm-hmm.
go higher, because know, most of these people don't know how much it costs to make a t-shirt.
Nope.
They know what they would pay at retail for a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can match that quality, maybe you can start there, or maybe just you probably have to bring
slightly
it down.
Under.
Yeah. But they're most people's version of what they think it costs is somewhere between, I don't know, Primark and wherever. But you've got to try and pitch it somewhere.
You're trying to think of another retailer.
Yeah, trying to think who is the best, like, top end high street retailer that you'd be like, oh, well.
For quality, probably like, oh, I don't know, it depends, because sometimes they're great and sometimes they're really bad.
Yeah, but let's say it's like £40 to £80 for a high end t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
So
you're probably like All Saints, Uniqlo, those kind of places.
Yeah, that's probably good. Good place to. So you're probably not going to charge most of your customers £40 for a t-shirt, but doesn't hurt to offer them a £40 t-shirt and a £20 t-shirt. But you're still making £10 in the £20, and even then have maybe like a £10 or a £12 t-shirt that you could still make £6 in each one, £7 in each one. That's why we talk. That's why, you know, everyone that comes on this podcast talks about good, better, best.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's because people like things in threes.
Gives them options.
Yeah, you've got to give people the options. You've got to show them don't be afraid to show them the expensive stuff. Even if they say no, it doesn't really matter. Mm. You offered it to them. Some of them will say yes.
Also, I think it plants the seed for the future. If they ever do anything where they're like, oh, we need a smaller run, but, you know, the t-shirt that Andy showed us in that last meeting was really nice. Maybe we just get less of those, or it might lead to another order.
Yeah, or they have a special event that they're going to and they want to dress accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, don't be afraid to offer those options, but do offer them options. You know, something that people are guilty of is offering an option and then
like one alternative and that's it,
or even just one. Like, that's not enough, because that's not how people's brains work. If you were to offer them a few options, they'll either pick one because they really like it, or it gives them enough to think about so they'll know exactly what they do want.
That's
the way to look at it, is you've got to make sure that they can make the choice with what you're offering.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say look for the price of the true cost, and then add a percentage, and then have a few different options where that percentage can be higher and higher in each one.
Yeah. While we're on that topic, I'm going to skip a question and jump to the next one, which I feel like fits very nicely into what you've just said. So this question came in on TikTok, and it's, how do I deal with customers asking for discounts all the time? Now, I've noted underneath this to talk about good, better, best and bundles.
Yeah.
Because I think they're two of the things that fit people asking for discounts. I mean, firstly, state your price with confidence is something that we've said before on lives, is something when we talk about pricing. If you say, these are my three options and these are how much they cost, and within a couple of seconds of you making that statement and the customer looking at it and not saying anything, if you immediately start to go, oh, but I could do it for £1 less per t-shirt, I could do it for this, or I could do it for that. Before that customer's even said anything, they're like, oh, okay, they're willing to drop on price here. But they might just be debating which one of the three they want, not that any of them are too expensive, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. It doesn't hurt if you're in a conversation with someone. If it's over email, or it's different. But if you're in person or you're on the phone, then it's very good to try and own that space, really. Like I say, don't be the first to buckle. Let them come to you first with, even if it's a counter offer or anything. But if you immediately show weakness, they'll know that that's only your first offer, and they can keep you driving you lower and lower.
Yeah.
And that's why you really have to know, for one, you know, what is that base value that you can get away of offering? So there'll be times when you will offer a discount because maybe it's to secure this business because you see some long-term value in it.
Yeah.
I would say that it's worth having perhaps a brackets. So you could, you know, the way sometimes the customer want a discount, you could say, well, I can give you a discount, but you have to order more.
Mm-hmm. Minimum quantity.
So sometimes it's better to keep adding more into, if they're trying to drive your price down, drive their volume up at the same time.
Yeah.
So that way you still have a nice amount in there. They're happy, you're happy. There's a opportunity there, but it's don't go too quickly. I would say on the good, better, best, doesn't have to be in that order. It could be when you present it to them, you don't have to start cheapest and go to the most expensive. Sometimes it doesn't hurt to go, it's almost like best, better, good is sometimes the way to go with it anyway.
People will always go, or I personally think that people always go for the mid-range, unless they're coming to you looking for something really high quality and premium, of which case you'll know that before you even have that meeting because they'll highlight it.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, they'll probably go for the middle option because they feel like they're making a saving on the most expensive one, but they feel like they're ordering quality because it's not the cheapest one.
Yeah. And there's a reason when you go into most shops, the sale rail's not the front. It's where they put the good stuff. It's where they put the stuff they want to feature, because that's the experience you want. They want you to have first when you go into a shop. So that there's a reason for that. So sometimes it's offer them the, like say, offer them the most expensive stuff, and then that's why the good, better, best is kind of the discounting because it's not just you just take one t-shirt in, and they want to try and drive you on price. Then you've only got one option to. You're only going to go down.
You can only go down one
if you go down by product, but you know you've built that percentage margin into the product, then you're not going to lose even if they pick the cheapest one.
And if you are going to go down on price, you also need to have calculated before you even walk into that meeting or before you send that email what your lowest price is that you can still make a profit on, like you said, because, all right, you might want to drop it a little bit to secure that job because you're new and you want the work, or it could lead to a longer term relationship. That's all fine. But you still don't want to run a job if you're not making any profit on it whatsoever. So you need to know like your baseline of, this is how low I can go. And after that, I'm comfortable saying no and walking away. And I think that's something else that people, especially when they first start out, can be a bit scared of someone asking them for something and then having to say, no, I can't do that. Like, that doesn't work for me.
Just explain to them that, you know, it's because if they say, why is it cost something? Well, it's a good quality product. If you know, theory, if you're listening to this, there's a good chance of using our transfers, which will last, and probably our machines, which mean you're going to get it right. And, you know, we've had plenty of garment companies on here that provide fantastic products. So the products that you'll be supplying them is good. So you can have that kind of confidence in and be like, no, this is how much it costs. But yeah, try not to just go straight to a discount, because otherwise you're all going to drive your prices down to the basement and none of you will make any money.
And also they will go somewhere else and pay somebody else's non-negotiable price. So why not secure that work for yourself? On the topic of stores, displays and creating that customer experience, what advice would you give someone, a decorator, heat printer, who's got like a bit of a showroom space or maybe like a reception area for their workshop? How would you recommend they display that? Do you have any tips for that?
Depends on the space, but yeah, I would go with the best stuff at the front, because you want, it's a first impression you're making on someone, in the same way any kind of first impression. So you want them to be impressed, you want them to see some color, you want them to see some vibrancy, maybe something a little difficult.
Is there a limit on how much stuff you would have out in a display room? Because I've been in some before where there's a lot of stuff on the shelf and it's kind of a bit, I wouldn't even say overwhelming, but it all just kind of looks the same. And you're like, well, what's the difference?
Yeah, you don't want someone to have to struggle to get through the rail. It needs to be like, it needs to be smooth and fast moving through it. It's good to have a little bit. You need to make sure you cover everything, so if that customer ask you about a product, you have it to hand. You don't want to be like, okay, let me go and have a look in the back and see if I've got one.
Dusty in a box somewhere.
kills the momentum anyway. Depends what type of business you are and what type of customer you're going for as well. The main thing is just to try and, depending on, if you know this person's coming in, then you should try and dress the area to their liking. What you want them to do when they come in is have a emotional reaction to what they see. They should need to be able to see themselves in the display.
Yeah.
So if it is workwear, then you should have workwear, but you should have, you know, the slightly nicer workwear with a better fit on it. You should have a cohesive message of the workwear. So if you're going to have a workwear set, it should be the same logo throughout, or variations on the logo, but it's a story. It shouldn't be like one on this one, different on that one, another color over there, completely different business on that one. It's got to be cohesive, so it has a sort of wow factor to it then, or at least like, oh, this person understands how to put a set together.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we talk about how you can get more money by selling sets. So the more products you can sell together, the better. But the examples have got to be cohesive like that to be able to create that connection, because they're like, oh, well, actually, those look, that hoodie looks great with that bag, actually, or that, oh yeah, we could throw some beanies in to go with that, or some caps.
Yeah.
So that way they have a reaction and they feel connected to you as a business when they come in.
Yeah, they feel like you understand what they're looking for before they've even had to ask in a way.
Yeah, and if it's a place where maybe you get some people coming and dropping by and you're not always sure they're coming, then just have the crown jewels out the front and just have a kind of a little bit of a selection, but just kind of make sure everything is cohesive and tied together.
Mm.
If you've got multiple colours, try and put the colours together. People love going in and seeing stuff that looks very organized. Let's say you've got 20 tops and you've got a mixture of, you've got 4 red and 3 blue and 5 green and 2 yellow.
Make a rainbow
color from
coordination.
It. Yeah. Color coordinated.
I never thought I'd hear the day that Andy was talking about color coordinating.
But it's true. You should think about it like that. If it's like more of a wall, you need to think about how the colours match together there, because you might approach that differently. I don't know whether it's still true, because it's a long time ago since I worked in a retail shop, but the advice the merchandisers always used to give around there when they come around and meet the shops is they try and do like almost like a checkerboard.
Okay.
So if you've got like a wall of 40 t-shirts, don't all necessarily go colour coordinating. If it's like rainbow colour coordinating, you can go
very
through
satisfying,
it.
Yeah.
But if we're talking like black, then white.
Yeah.
It's better to checkerboard like it because it's visually more interesting and appealing and less like black, white.
It's also probably easier to see, isn't it? Because if you put 10 black t-shirts together and 10 white, your eyes kind of get lost in what you're looking at. Whereas if they're visually broken up by the bulk block colours, it's easier to differentiate and go, oh, I like that one, I like that one.
Yeah. So I would say if you've got a shop, then test a few versions out on family and friends, get them to come in and see how they react to different setups as well.
Yeah.
Because they'll probably give you some good feedback.
What was easy to see, what wasn't, what they were missing.
What they liked, what they reacted to.
Yeah.
I would also say go into the nearest shopping centre to you and look around shops, especially ones that are perhaps similar products or similar customer, and just look around at how they've dressed their areas. What can you learn from that?
Yeah, put mannequins together, have a rail behind it, which is something we do for events here, like Workwear Reimagine that we had not long ago. We had all of the mannequins dressed and layered in a way. So it was t-shirt, shirt, body warmer, jacket, like whatever that combo might be, with a rail next to it with the options of shirt, the options of t-shirt. And then that made not only the choices easy for somebody that was coming in because they could see the options for each garment, but they could also see it combined in the finished product. And I think those two things, when you're choosing, you want to see the finished product for yourself, your staff, whoever it is you're purchasing for, but then also having the blank options as well makes it visually easy to be like, oh, okay, I get the differences now.
Yeah. And to add to that is like, don't give them too much choice.
So it's always a mistake.
That's why, that's going back to that good, better, best, is that like 3 is a good number.
Yeah.
Because that's enough of a range. So
3 like, t-shirts, 3 shirts, 3 jackets.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
On each
for each like genre of that you're offering them. But if you gave like, hey, do you want to pick from one of those 10 t-shirts? They won't make a decision. It's too much choice.
They also probably won't really be able to tell the difference between most of them either. Like, I know you can because you're the decorator, you've picked them all. But if there's like a tiny, tiny difference in, I don't know, the fabric composition of 2 white t-shirts, they're not going to know. Like, they don't need that choice because at the end of the day, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's, you've got to offer them like an a la carte menu.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I always think back to whenever like Gordon Ramsay would go to like do his kitchen nightmares and he'd go into a restaurant and he'd pull out the menu and it's like 10 pages long. And he's like,
where the hell do I start?
Like, what do you even offer here?
Yeah.
I don't understand. You've got to think about how you like to be offered choice in your own life outside of work and apply those principles. But like 3 is a good number.
Yeah.
That's what I always say. If we're doing something for our own selves from a marketing point of view, like try and give me 3 options.
Yeah.
If you just gave me 1, I'm probably not going to be inclined to make a decision on it, or I'm not. If you got it perfect, then maybe I'll be like, yeah, that's great.
No,
you got a better chance of like 2 or 3 because you're like, okay, you got second guess what the person's going to ask, or like, what is that person think they want? But actually even if it's a bad idea, I'll show it to them visually and they'll be like, yeah, that wasn't actually a great idea.
Yeah.
It looked terrible when we made that adjustment to it, but that's why 3 is a good number for it.
Mm-hmm. We've gone off on a bit of a tangent there, but I feel like that was kind of an interesting one because, yeah, we don't really talk about store setups. I feel like there's, yeah, more to that we could dive into.
And, you know, I mean, I haven't looked, but I would assume that there's a wealth of knowledge on YouTube about it.
Oh, definitely, because it's all about people's perception, isn't it? And the way things behave and the way that they associate with different things. Like, there's probably a bank of books and podcasts and God knows what out there about it. So, yeah. Okay, so next question. What is one small change that a decorator could make to impact their profits?
So I would go back to the earlier point of, do you understand your true cost of making your t-shirt? So if you're listening early and thinking like, I never really truly worked out, or you're just including t-shirt and transfer or t-shirt and embroidery in that cost, then probably, you know, there's an element of profit missing there. It could be that actually you're product becomes more expensive technically because it's the true cost
because you don't
because you've done it wrong before.
You don't understand your pricing properly. Charging more without
Actually you might not realize you're losing money, or you're like, you know, maybe if you're an at-home business, you're like, well, we just pay for the electricity anyway because we're at home.
Yeah, you're like, actually, that all goes into an indirect cost.
Yeah, so your prices will be going up somewhere else, or you'll be losing somewhere else. So I'd say
you need to make more money to pay your electricity bill because you've doubled your usage over the last 6 months since you've been running your press from home.
So make sure you have the true costs, because then you want, until you've got the true cost, you can't make the true profit.
No.
So that's where I would start. I would say once you get to a certain point is to get help. I know that we had Jessie from Squeegee and Ink on a little while ago, and I remember her being very impassioned because she said one of the best pieces of advice she would give to people is to get a financial advisor. Something that we are very big on at Styles is we have experts that do our finances here. They make sure that they understand everything. They triple check everything. You know, we get audited once a year, but externally, to make sure that everything is perfect. But you know what? I mean, maybe people are listening like, accountants turn t-shirt decorators. In that case, skip forward for a couple of minutes.
Skip forward, but also let us know, because that's a really interesting storyline that I'd love to ask you about. But
I know that, like, you know, neither of us should be running the finances on the business. You know, we're pretty competent in Excel, we're pretty good with maths, but my numbers are pretty solid. But like, I wouldn't like want to be responsible for a business on that necessarily.
No, and also the people that, like, they're talking about hiring accountants, financial advisors, they've been doing it for longer, so it's just repetitive for them at this point. It's like you printing 1,000 t-shirts and then getting someone that's never printed one before. It's the same principle. You've got the practice, the knowledge, the hours spent doing that. And like you said, you spot things that other people wouldn't, like, oh, that collar's on the press. Oh, that decimal shouldn't be there. You've missed something here.
And I spoke to someone recently who's in accounting, not outside of us, and they were basically like, they have so much software now, automates a lot of accounting as well, is that they said that, like, they're operating like a multi-million pound business with no spreadsheets, because it's all inputted into the reports by software.
Which is a lot more accurate than humans. There's less mistakes.
So that's why, you know, a financial advisor would be a good way to probably find profit, or at least keep you honest with your pricing so that you can strive to make greater profit.
And also, there might be areas in your business that you've been undercharging or overcharging, and the financial accountant, whoever you get on to help you with that, can go, actually, have you considered this or this? And chances are it'll be something you haven't even thought about looking at, because why should you? You're not an expert in that field. So,
and then just try and find a nice mix of customers. Something we've spoken about on quite a few, like, more on our, like, actual in-person events, is actually thinking about who your customer is and who the blend could be. Try not to just think like too small. You don't have to be like, I'm not saying you're going to go and like sell uniform to Amazon tomorrow, but I mean, you know, one of the things I've said it quite a few times is, okay, who's doing workwear? And a lot of people put their hands up. So, well, who's doing the workwear or the corporate wear for what that workwear person's building? And everyone's hands are down.
I think along the chain.
If you're doing a high vis jacket for someone who's on a building site, who's going in the building? The company going in the building's probably got one more employees, because it's a building. It's going to have to house people. They don't just. No one tends to build stuff and just hope someone goes in it now. They don't speculatively build a build anything now. It has to be paid for. So, maybe there's a software company or an accountant or a lawyer firm going in there, or anyone that's got a higher perceived, you know, is more comfortable paying up for a higher perceived value products.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, okay, if you have the builder, which you might only make like £2 or £3 on each item. But then on the other hand, if you've got like a software company there, you could make £20, £50 on a jacket.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also like having a blend of not just cheap stuff, have some more higher end stuff in there as well. So
you
can kind of have a little bit of balance.
Yeah, especially if they're like going on the building construction market, like new build houses now, new build estates. If you're being shown around something that's brand new, the estate agent's going to present himself in a certain way, because I mean all estate agents do to a certain extent, but to your point, yeah, of like
they all wear jacket, nice jackets,
they all have the decent like the Nimbus
or
the
gilet or something like that,
they've all got something on it where you look at that and go, well, that looks really premium.
Yeah,
but that has to be branded because it's technically workwear.
Yeah, so yeah, just think about your blend of customers as well, probably. You know, I won't go into it in detail because we've talked about it a lot, but it's actually just time, like how much profit are you losing on time by being inefficient?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got many videos around that, we've spoken about it at events, but actually just like, is your process set up correctly in your shop to get from product coming into product leaving? Mm-hmm. Is it organized efficiently? Because even if it's 5 seconds, that'll increase your profit margins by saving that. So just question everything you do as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, following question. We've kind of answered some of these already, so I'm just skipping over a couple. Let's go out of pricing for a second and, like, I don't want to say lighten the mood, but let's, like, bring it up a little bit. So, Andy, what is your personal favourite go-to heat press setup and why?
If I was starting my own business or if I...
It doesn't specify. It just says heat press setup. So let's do two different situations. First one being you're setting up a business from scratch. Second one being you are the marketing director here and you have to print a couple of shirts for us to wear on the podcast, and you come down on a Monday morning. Which press in this room do you turn on?
So if I'm starting out myself, honestly, I'd probably go with like a 40 by 50 auto open. And if I could, a 360 hat press.
Okay.
Because I can probably do pretty much everything with that.
Yeah, lower heat.
I've got the lower heat because, you know, knowing what I know from all the projects we've done is that there's good money in hats.
Yeah.
We've spoken about that a lot. Now go and watch the YouTube videos where we talk about that to learn more on that, because we've spoken for a good 45 minutes, hour on multiple occasions about it.
Multiple occasions and how to make money.
I would probably want the auto because it's got the pressure readout, which, you know, we rely on because of the amount of stuff that we decorate, like pressure readout is so important. So I'd want that. The dual timers is good. Also, everything has the change wheel pattern, so I know I'm good on everything for that side. But I think that's a...
space saving as well.
Yeah, that's a pretty sort of attainable setup to get started with, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't... In my first press would be... It could be a Fusion IQ, but it probably wouldn't be above that. Yeah. But I think I want that hat press in there. That's probably like a little bit of personal taste in terms of the products I'd want to make.
Well, that's what they're asking. That is what they're asking. What you're
so I'd want to be making hats for profit and for just because they're cool, really.
Yeah.
But the auto
and you do actually wear hats.
Yeah.
I feel like you're one of the only people in this building that actually like comes in wearing caps.
Yeah. So I think that would be my setup. Quick slips, obviously. Having a 360 kind of opens you up for neck labels.
Yeah.
Some left chest on polyester products as well.
Jackets for workwear,
So it can also kind of get you in the game there for some hard to decorate products. So I think that would be a pretty cool setup to have. You can do everything at that point. And then if you want to add extra functionality in with the swing and the draw or air pressure, you know, once you've made enough profit initially, then you've got something to work towards then.
I think I would probably go for the auto open as well, but I wouldn't necessarily, if I wasn't going for the Fusion, I think I'd jump straight from the auto open to the single air Fusion only because with the air Fusion, you can have power platens on them, which people ask us a lot, can we use them with Fusion IQs? And you're like, technically yes, but if you pull it out and it pulls the bank off and the pressure, people break them, and that's a whole other conversation. But I also love the fact that the air pressure is controlled. So you can print a range of different things. You can have that lower heat with ease.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were to go auto to fusion to single air, I almost feel like you're better off holding off for like another 3-6 months if you can and getting the air powered model.
Yeah.
And then you've got two plus your 360 and you're kind of set for life then, unless you want to go into two workspaces, projection alignment, all of that. But from a basic like single head press, that would probably be my progression journey, if you like.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah. And also the single air fusion is my personal favourite anyway, because I'm lazy and I don't like adjusting pressure.
Yeah, so I think, to answer your second question, if I'm coming down here to print stuff, I'm probably turning on the Pro Place.
Yeah, every time.
Because, again, it's got the air pressure, which, again, gives you that peace of mind, even for us. Then it's got the dual heads as well, so I can get to my work quicker without compromising on quality.
Mm-hmm.
It heats up really quickly.
Yeah. To be fair, it does, yeah.
So, and it's, you know, if it's... And it's got the projection, so I know that, like, you know, if...
Your placement's going to be right.
My placement's going to be right. I don't have to ruin any T-shirts. So, you know...
What, like the last one you printed on the manual fusion without the projection that went a little bit wrong?
Exactly. So if you're a bit rusty because you've been at too many events, then it doesn't hurt to have the projection alignment there.
Basically, Andy's not allowed to print on anything that's not Pro Place IQ anymore.
That's it. I think I've become too accustomed to that Pro Place lifestyle.
The Pro Place lifestyle. I love that.
But yeah, that would be, you know, it's the best machine. So that's why I'm going to turn that one on.
Yeah. And also it's just easy. It is. Yeah. I know there's a lot of benefits data wise with the IQ, like there's so many things from like a business perspective, but it's a really cool machine and it's really easy to use.
Yeah.
Like if nothing else, if you're just coming in to have a go, if you book a one-to-one here and you want to look at the auto opens, like you're gonna look at the Pro Place as well, because it's in the room, aren't you?
Yeah.
Sticking with personal favorites then, let's go with from 2025, because I feel like we've worked with some different blank companies this year, some like new t-shirts we haven't printed with before. Like, we've expanded our range, if you like, of what's probably hanging in both of our wardrobes right now. So what are your personal favorite, we'll go top three, blanks to decorate this, or blanks that you have decorated this year? Because there's some that I've probably decorated that you haven't, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So what were your top three blanks to decorate this year?
So apologies to all the blanks companies for not knowing their SKUs and codes.
If I can find them, I'll overlay them on the screen.
So I'd say that for me, I have been enjoying a lot of the heavyweight products that have been coming out, because they're really good quality. They feel really nice to wear. The fit on them is really good. So of the ones we've been using, we've used the Bella Canvas ones, which are really nice for the show. We got early access to those. They're really nice.
The grey ones in particular.
The grey ones is a really nice colour. It looks really good with the... We're both big fans of our neon inks here, and they looked really good with that, which we paired with the new hoodies as well, which, you know, from our marketing perspective, is that anything without pockets on it is a good thing, because we can put a bit more transfers on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably a selfish thing there. But the two of those together, I kind of cheat and have those two together,
Bella Canvas heavyweight is one.
Yeah, and I really like the new colours that they had, which probably I wouldn't pick to wear, but actually look really good with the show examples we had with the, I think, is it the dust colour of the hoodie? Is it dust or stone?
The ones that we wore?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that quite suited you, actually.
Yeah, but that's not something, but I probably wouldn't like...
Nice little beige number.
But I was like, with the neon inks, these look nice.
They did pop really nicely. Yeah.
So I liked the new Anthem shirts as well. They're really comfy to wear. They decorated really nicely. They had a nice fit. They've all washed really well.
With too. Pro on them as well. That was a really good combo.
And I would say maybe, you know, because it's kind of fresh in the mind, I would say I was very pleasantly surprised by a lot of the corporate workwear stuff we did with Stanley Stella a couple of weeks ago with the overshirts. I think that they were, I mean, they're easy to decorate anyway because they're just lighter colours, but the actual tailoring on the fit on them was very nice, which I wasn't expecting them to be bad or anything, but like, it's been a while since I've like had to wear an Oxford shirt for work, you know.
Yeah, you were expecting the bad example that you brought with you to the event, the very stiff,
old-fashioned. I think scarred from the past, probably, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that didn't feel very nice. I don't know how you wore that. The second I touched it, it's like nails on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm. I was like, nope, I can't wear that. So, yeah, I was very glad that they had those for the event for us. That's definitely up there with my top ones as well. The Oxford shirt, the cream blue and the white are probably my favourite. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's probably up there with mine. And also I like the fact that now we discussed it more at the event, but with corporate work where you don't have to wear it as like a button-up shirt tucked into trousers. We had it on with, we all kind of wore what we wanted to trouser-wise. And we had T-shirts and we wore them open and it was very, we looked smart and professional, but it was 2025 corporate workwear, which I think suited our personalities a bit more as well, which was nice.
Yeah.
I've got a bit of a thing with the Stanley Seller hoodies and sweatshirts at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that's because we've had them here and I've been using them more, but they just feel like something you'd pick up out of All Saints or Uniqlo or like that. They are the higher tier level of like blank garment. Oh, in terms of T-shirt, I'm looking around the room trying to think what would be my favourite. I mean, I like the heavyweight stuff. I do, but I also really like the, and this is a bit of a rogue one because I haven't printed it yet.
Okay.
But the AS Colour delivery that we had this week, there were four different items in there. There was two different versions of crop tee, which I think I'm leaning more towards from a woman's perspective. I've been cutting all the bottoms of my T-shirts off when I wear them for work because they're just a bit too long. But the AS Colour ones are cropped. It's like what Zazie said when she came on to talk about the baby tee collection. They're appropriately cropped. They're like not ridiculously long.
Okay.
And then I'm kind of comparing two together, but I also ordered a ribbed top as well to see how that prints.
Right.
Slightly different with like some silicone on it.
Yeah. That reminds me actually of the canvas jacket that we had at FESPA. Don't you remember that was an AS Colour one?
Yeah, on the Ultra Colour Max bit, I'm with you.
Yeah, so that looked really nice.
I was like, I wasn't given a brown jacket to wear.
No, it was on the examples to show what you could do and different fabrics you could decorate with, but it decorated up really nicely.
Yeah, I think that's in a reel that we've not long posted, actually. Right. Like, looking over Ultra Colour Max, that looked really good. And also, we're jumping around now. We've listed like 20. But the jacket that you guys wore for FESPA, the rain, not rain jacket, but like that kind of soft, casual, like bomber, if you like, but not padded.
Yeah.
Josh put it on and was like, oh, I think we should get these for like the American shows. And like all of the guys wore them for, even on the days they weren't supposed to, like to and from the event. And they were just literally given them the day before it started.
Yeah.
So I think that's a success as well. I can't remember where they were from.
They were Build Your Brand.
They were Build Your Brand.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, like the jackets and stuff like that. So there's a lot of cool blanks that we've experimented with.
Yeah, I think, I'd say, we discussed this on the like, post PMP podcast we did, but I would say that there's a lot this year, like in the first sort of quarter of the year, of new products. But last year, I'd say there's probably not as much or not as much interesting stuff. But it felt like this year there's a lot more new stuff coming out. I couldn't tell you why, but it just did feel like there's lots of new interesting stuff to play around with and offer customers differently.
It's a bit overwhelming from a decorator's point of view, isn't it? Because people are like, how do you feel about this? How do you decorate that? And I'm like, there's one of 50 things here that we haven't printed yet.
Right.
Bombers from Stanley Stellar as well, printed like a dream.
Yeah, but we put some DGF prints on the backs of bombers and it looks really good, actually. So I think it was a silicone on the front.
Silicone on the front, DTF on the back.
Yeah, so that's something that you could, if you want something a bit different to offer customers, they decorated up really nicely.
Yeah, and they feel like Zara kind of quality jackets. They're lovely. Okay, final question for the day. We've got, there's like another five on here that we haven't managed to get through, so we might have to do a follow-up episode. Mm-hmm. But the last question for today came through on Instagram again, and it's tips for being productive day-to-day as a garment decorator. I'm fairly new and any advice is appreciated.
Okay, so I guess it really comes around to probably how you organise your day, most likely. So one we'd mentioned on second ago, what is your setup like? So try and have like a nice organized setup. It's probably a good place to start. It's like when you're first starting out, you probably are going to have lots of different t-shirt samples and transfer samples, but like
tests and stuff
as best you can organize them, because if you come down to your workstation, the first thing you see is this mess. Like immediately your productivity is like, it's going to be a struggle that day. So I would say like tidy maybe at the end of the day, make sure part of your process is the last 10
minutes
of the day.
5 minutes before, yeah.
All right, I've got to put everything away. I've got to tidy up.
Yeah.
So when I come the next day,
sort my showroom out.
Yeah, I'm going to be in a productive space straight off the bat. That would be a good place to start with. I would say, like, you know, probably try and, like, hey, what write lists are there at the end of the day as well? Of like, what have I got to do tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably like, okay, how many?
I remember you telling me this like a year or two ago. And do you still do it?
Yeah, I try and I try and write a list, or like at least check through my list. Of, okay, what didn't I achieve today? What did I achieve? What have I have to do tomorrow?
Yeah,
because that way you can organize your day. Because you know, if you're starting out, it's probably just you.
Yeah.
So you've got t-shirts to decorate. You've got products to order.
Got marketing to do.
Got marketing to do. So what order do you do in?
Emails
to do. You've probably got to go to the post office or a DPD drop-off or something like that. So probably, I don't know, 9 till 10 is answer emails maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe 10 till whenever is decorating, because you want to make sure you get them out that as soon as possible. Turnaround is important.
Yeah, don't miss the shipment for that day.
And then, okay, if there's any admin you have to do, maybe try and group admin into a section or a day of the week or a time of the week. So you try and do it all at once. And then, yeah, marketing be a big one. It's like, okay, for starting out, like, well, everyone has to do marketing.
Yeah, customer service.
But we know that people don't always allocate time to do it. But I think if you can try and allocate time to do it, you're more likely to do it.
Mm, even if it's like an hour a week to start with, just like on a Friday, some pictures, some reels, and then you have a reminder in your diary or schedule something to go out every other day initially when you first start your business.
Yeah, but I'll just try and make sure you like write it out or use an app like a Trello or something, Milo Note, just have some sort of resource where you can look at it. Or even if it's a whiteboard, or, you know, you could just literally like take a whiteboard marker and write on top of a picture frame in your that's hanging on the wall. Something so there's like, you look at it and you're like, this is what I have to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there'll be days when you're more productive, days when you're less productive. But if you've got like a plan, you've got a chance that way.
A rough structure. Because like some days you'll probably have more jobs to print than others. Some days you might have just one t-shirt, one run of 20 t-shirts to do. Another day you might have 10 and you spend most of your day actually printing and you go, okay, well, tomorrow I need to catch up on admin, and it will move a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, that's a good point.
And then I'll be like, obviously, Friday at 12 o'clock, you know, you need to be making sure you're tuning into Friday Live.
I wonder what you were going to say then. I was like, what do people do on a Friday?
11 a.m. on a Monday, download the podcast.
Very good, Andy.
But yeah, have a plan. That's probably the most productive thing you can do.
Monday morning, listen to the podcast while you're printing. AirPods in, heat press on. That's how you do Monday. Friday, you join us, you watch us live, you get involved with questions and comments, and we have a bit of a laugh.
Yeah, anything that went wrong that week, ask us
about it. Yeah. And then from the flip side of that, I know that question came from somebody who's starting out, but tips for somebody to be a bit more productive when they are, say they've been in business for a few years, they've got bigger jobs coming in, maybe you've got a couple of members of staff, productivity tips for the other end of the business.
I mean, probably some of it's the same. I mean,
being organized
out being organized and now you're less organized, like
there's
go back to when what made you more organized. It probably a good place to start is having a plan, writing it down, trying just like, oh yeah, I know what it is,
check keep your whiteboard
head. No, make sure that in that case it's not just having a plan for yourself, is you need to make sure that everyone's clear on the wider plan, and then maybe they have their own
individual plans,
or they at least have you at least empower them to have the mindset to have their own plan of how they want. Because everyone will plan out differently, but everyone needs one. It could be that one's a list, one's color-coded. It could be all sorts of different things.
And he looks at me because he knows I do that.
It could be like different visual ways of looking at it.
Yeah.
Because everyone like learns or takes it on differently themselves.
I feel like when you have staff as well, like that's where you really need to utilize data more than anything else. Because say, for example, you were the one printing initially and you were printing every single job that came through the door. And then fast forward a couple of years and you've got one or two people printing for you on heat presses, but you're not necessarily on the shop floor every day. Maybe you're marketing, networking, whatever that might be. You still want to know all of the data from what's been happening in the shop, but you also don't want to micromanage, because then that's detrimental to the business, depending on who you employ. So that's where IQ technology that Hotronix Presses has really comes in handy, because not only, I know we speak about this all the time, but you can look at a manager level, you can look at how many presses it's done, whether it was lifted up early, whether the pressure was off, like all of that. If a job comes back and there's an issue with it and you weren't in the shop that day, maybe you were out visiting a customer, you can pinpoint which heat press, which user, which job and what went wrong to where that problem like lied initially. And just look at your overall stats for the month. How much are you printing? How many jobs went out the door? Did you make more or less that month? Like all of that can be told from your heat presses, like brain, if you like.
Yep. How, what did you compare to last year?
Yeah.
Most sort of more established businesses, it's, you know, there's lots of productivity that can be gained by eliminating bad habits above all else, really.
Like second pressing.
Second pressing or just like, oh, why are you doing that? Oh, like, I think it's better that way, or...
Yeah.
You know, just I question prefer it.
You're like, really?
Question everything that way.
I think that's a very good place to end on. We've been chatting about everything printing for the last like half an hour. So we'll do a follow-up episode, another Q&A to get through the rest of these, because there's quite a few on there that kind of link together in a different group. So we'll do them a different day. But anything else to mention before we wrap up?
If you didn't get your question answered or you didn't get your question in on time, don't wait to the next one. Get in touch with us on socials, ring us up. If you've got things that you want help with, get in touch, or like join us on the next Friday Live. We'll be more than happy to help you and see if there's any advice we can offer.
Yeah, we are doing a Friday Lunchtime Live. I think it's either when this goes out, it will be next week. I think it's like the 20th of June to recap the Workwear event. So if you missed the event, make sure to join that Friday Live, because we're going to be talking about the opportunity, the market numbers, physically how to print and decorate the shirts that we've mentioned today, polos, that kind of stuff. And yeah, we're going to have another podcast episode every other week on Mondays. So make sure you headphones in, press on and listen to Garment Decorators.